Welcome to episode 20, Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education, and...
Art of craziness?
Okay.
Yep. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick, and together we are the hosts of the podcast, the Island CT Podcast.
So we have some administration, we have an update too. We are recording on October 8th, 2015.
Yep.
And what did you want to add?
Just that the server's still down, but I mean, that was part of the plan. We knew at this time it would still be down.
Right.
But we're pretty certain, we're making a big push, that it should be up. So, wait a second. The server's up. We don't have a hosting site.
Right. So, we hope to have a hosting
site. Within two weeks. By the way, thank you for doing all that research on the hosting sites.
Yeah.
And we haven't decided yet.
But we have not.
By the way, when I got it, I read it all the way through carefully.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you had time. I don't mean to act so surprised. Didn't think you had time yet.
I want to make this happen, and so it was pretty important. I haven't looked at my notes that I had from months ago when we were first looking at it, and then Isaac took care of it using DNS.NET or something.
Right.
Can't remember. Mm-hmm. But we're definitely not going back to that, so we want to make it more easy.
Okay. And so this week I've also wrote a blog entry.
So it's like, you 4 weeks early, I think? Because mine is due on Sunday.
I have no idea now. I just got
because
confused.
Because the server being down.
And I felt like I was behind, so I wrote one.
Okay. We'll have to see. Maybe.
Yeah. So I went back to the Himalayan May Apple.
Yeah.
And I went back into it. Very interesting stuff. And just to think about how they look at genes and think about the genes and how they interact with each other. And this group in particular chose several genes to insert at the same time. And that gave them just a very positive outcome. And I wrote about it in the blog.
I faintly remember, did we talk about that in the Labs podcast?
Yeah, we did. So I'm not going to talk about it much now. Yeah. But a really interesting article on genetic engineering.
Oh, wait a second. The drug usually came from May apples, but there was a better way to go about it, right?
So it was a particular drug, and I didn't put all the information up here because
it just
I
says
talked
May
about
apple
it
canceled.
Last week. So it's...
But they found a better one in the Himalayan species, right?
And not only that, there's a particular chemical that actually is really beneficial to the initial drug that they're going for, and it's usually has to be added later, but with this genetic engineering, they're able to get both from one plant, and they're hoping that the combination of these two things found or produced from the plant, the genetically modified plant, will actually be more beneficial than some of the things that they've had to do where they've had to alter the chemical for it to be used with people. And it was about solubility in that. And by changing the solubility, they're also changing the way the drug was interacting with the person, as well as the strength. And so...
Well, I haven't written my blog entry yet for this week. And I've skipped talking on the podcast a lot about a lot of them. Although sometimes I ended up talking about them without even mentioning they were part of the blog. They were just...
Yeah, I really just meant to give it a quick mention.
I think my next one, the one that's due on Sunday, I think I'll do probably about finally completing the build on our 80-meter transmitter, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Although, in terms of having it be a real 80-meter transmitter, we still have a problem with not getting enough power out. I don't want to touch it.
Right.
This Saturday.
Yeah.
We're having
until after this Saturday. Yeah.
With kids at the at Smith Middle School.
Yeah. So hopefully outside.
Hopefully outside, but
that's
the rain
our
doesn't.
Goal.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So well, you were supposed to.
So
decide.
I did. No. Well, we decided not to decide until tomorrow.
Decide not to decide. Gotcha.
We're so hopeful that we'll get them outside. These are a group of students that do not get to go outside often.
Okay.
And or so just don't have people that are excited about being outside with them and having things to do and finding things to do in nature.
Good to go all the way. No, it's not too far. You could even decide to meet at the school and then do a last minute, okay, let's all drive up. Or
Yeah. So we're hoping.
Except that it's not going to work for Ardiff.
Right, you have
I'd
to
have
go
to
set
up the transmitters ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So it
yeah.
It kind of has to be decided
It has
tomorrow.
To be decided tomorrow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So.
By the way, to interject before we move off topic about the drug discovery, I can use it as a minor topic. Did you hear about the new class of, so this is drug discovery, but it's not anti-cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a new class of antibacterial drug this week. Or last week?
I think I faintly
just
remember
heard,
reading
just
it,
heard about it,
and
read.
I yeah. just breezed by.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I guess there hasn't been a new class since the 1960s or 70s, something like that. And this is the first time, as far as I know, that it's actually, it wasn't discovered by looking at natural substances. I can't remember which company, but they had a a library of chemicals and derivatives. And they basically did a scan through, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of compounds, and then found one that seemed to have a antibacterial activity. And it's interesting because it's not the usual type. If I remember correctly, most drugs, they bind to a protein, presumably on the surface, but not necessarily. It could be inside or some enzyme and disrupt it, inhibit it somehow. This one binds an RNA, I think. And I think it's binds an RNA that has a particular structure, so it's not the sequence it's going for. It's for the shape of the RNA. So it's kind of cool, And it's definitely not even close to marketable yet, and they have some problems with it. Like, it looks like resistance to it develops pretty fast. That's the point where you start doing all sorts of tests and add functional groups on the surface of your molecule and take some off until you get one that's slightly different and stays in the body longer, is more effective, less toxic. Lots of research still to do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is exciting, though, because I knew that about antibiotic drugs, because I remember reading up on it and thinking, wow, I just assumed we constantly had new drugs coming on.
Well, of course, there's derivatives of drugs where we already know the mechanism.
Right.
So that's one thing. But I think research into those has really gone down.
It has. So that was the other part of the article that I was reading.
Right.
Research and development is just not there. Yeah. And because there's no longer that force behind it.
You know why it's not there?
I forget. I totally forget.
Because if you
were
put the same amount into antibiotics and drug development and any kind of chronic disease, then when someone gets the disease, they have to just keep taking a drug. But if someone gets a bacterial infection with your new drug, they take it for 3 days to a week.
Right.
And then they stop taking it and it's done. So in terms of recouping cost,
right,
it's it's relative to chronic diseases, it's not worth putting the money into it.
Right. Your payback is minor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's necessarily true, but that's the way they've made the analysis, the mm-hmm. drug companies.
Yeah.
So.
I have heard similar things to anyway. That. Wow. Yeah.
Minor topics.
Okay. How about you start with your minor topics?
Okay. Well, I'm not going to talk about the Nobel Prizes because they're just coming out all over this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so neither of us. Have you noticed anyone in particular?
I haven't been following it this week.
So there's the physics one is kind of sounds cool. It has to do with neutrino vibration, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
It's highlighted in Science.
I don't want to see it.
Right now, too.
Is it? Mm-hmm. See, that's the issue. It was coming up on the website right as I was having to go back to work.
And they were putting, the different Nobel, I was like, okay, I better not touch it right now.
So, but at work, we're all really excited because of the one in chemistry.
Really?
Yeah, Aziz Sankar. He's from UNC, Chapel Hill.
Really?
I think he's in biochemistry. I looked, so let me get a picture of him.
So he's at UNC?
Yeah.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah. And in this picture, so that's him.
Yeah.
A picture of him. And I was just doing a search for images for you. And congratulations to UNC School of Medicine Professor Aziz Sankar, Nobel Prize in Chemistry.
School of Medicine. Oh, that's awesome.
So he's sharing it with two others, and it's on research having to do with DNA repair.
Neat.
So.
Neat.
Yep.
Oh, that's really
very
neat.
Cool. There's mm-hmm. another guy. Actually, the other guy, one of the two other guys is at Duke.
Oh, wow.
And the third one is in Sweden, if I remember correctly.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Right in our location. Yep. Nice. Yep. Oh, that's wonderful. So one of the minor topics that I chose this week is water on Mars.
Yeah.
And the reason I chose it is because this one student, and I think it was one of my Makerspace students, comes running in and he goes, "Did you know that there's proof that they have water on Mars now?" And I was asking about it, but he didn't seem to know much more about it.
Yeah.
So it's neat. It's part of the data that they're...
Okay, so... Right. That's right. Water, there's not... So this is proof?
So the analysis... Sorry, I was trying to open
to
it
get,
up
to open
and
the
it's
link.
Not doing it.
Make a selection first.
Okay, I'll just...
So the caps, the ice caps on Mars are CO2 ice, right? Is that...
Yeah.
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 And then there's evidence geologically from
right.
patterns of rock that there was probably flowing.
Right. So this article...
But it hasn't been actually found, is that...
This okay. is the article that's focusing on the geological processes and that they're using those, the methods that they use for observing Earth for Mars.
Yeah.
And so they say that from that evidence that they expect that there is flowing water, and they also expect that it probably supported microbial life, which I think is pretty exciting. And all of this data that they're getting right now is from the Curiosity rover.
Oh, cool.
And so they're going through the analysis of it.
Where is... So Curiosity, did... Is this
so
still
it
going,
was or? On the edge of the Gale crater.
Gotcha.
And...
2012.
Okay. So this is some of the 2012 data that they're going through.
Right. They're just getting through the data now. And This is so typical. This is going to be a big thing with the Pluto one, right?
Right.
They're analyzing that continuously, but it only, all that data was collected for over, just over, is it hours or just a day?
Right.
When it was flying by Pluto.
Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was really neat that this is like a project that's going to take a lot more time and a lot more analysis.
Yeah.
And it's just really neat to see.
I'm curious to see exactly what that means.
Proof yes.
of water. I mean,
yeah.
I'll have to see it to understand, right. see what the data is to understand.
Yeah, and so it'll be neat to look more closely at that data, and I bet it's in the new publication of Science this week, because I found this in the news,
awesome.
In the Science News section, so that's neat.
I'll probably look at it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So what do you have for other minor
topics? Mm-hmm. Let me see, I talked about the UNC one, super minor. It is awesome to have the right tools for the job. As a matter of fact, it's awesome to have tons of tools.
Nice.
So we got a bunch of stuff in the mail
this week
because we did some orders for building the next set of transmitters. And we got these nice little knobs, which I kind of had like... I narrowed down the choice before you got to see them because there were certain things that I... thought, you know, this has to be. But then you did the final choice.
Right.
Even though I said, I don't like that for everything.
Right. I was just about to say that. I was like, so Patrick invites me over and he says, hey, Kelly, how about you get to choose what kind of knobs we have? And so I'm looking at them and I'm like, oh, how about that one? He goes, No, that one's not going to work because, you know, you can't really see it in this kind of lighting. And then I'd go, oh, okay, how about this one? Oh, no, because that one doesn't, it's not a very good one, the way it moves. It doesn't have the notches and that.
You ended up picking them.
Yeah, I did.
Like, I wanted the lighter colored ones.
Right.
But anyway, so.
Yeah, we negotiated.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah, they came in. They're really good. They have two little screws to hold them. I didn't realize that. That really is nice. But anyway, like, we have a lot of tools.
We do.
I remember when we were back in Michigan and having to put stuff together and just like hacking stuff together and be just like junk because of. And slowly over time, you accumulate them. And these knobs require tiny little hex.
Oh, really?
And I just went looking, and sure enough, we have tiny little hexes that fit just perfectly.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, thank God, because, that would be such a pain. Wow. Anyway, they look really good.
Wow.
So that's super minor, but it's, I feel like writing a blog entry about having the right tools for the job.
Yeah. Which, it's really neat, like, if you think about it. Right now, we've been doing a little bit more work with radio transmitters and that. Patrick's been doing a lot of work. But also, the makerspace has kind of kicked off, where suddenly I had to pull out the toolbox this week for the first time and really, you know, start getting my stuff together.
You know, well, some of the kids wanted RGB LEDs.
Yes.
We can't even order them on time now if you wanted them.
No, but that's okay.
That's okay. Keep them wanting stuff.
Yeah, I think we have to hold back on that because the excitement's high.
Yeah.
And thought process is not as high. So they're like, you know, looking for things. They did a really awesome job. So they tested a bunch of solar cell cars and then they started taking the solar cells off and hooking them up together to see how much voltage they could get so that they could increase the speed of the car. They were doing some cool stuff. Just, you know, really.
We definitely have to look at the
nice projects
we have.
Yeah.
In that bag in the living room.
Yes.
Because we have they're tiny little ones, but probably you can light an LED with one of those if you have sunlight.
Right. And the other exciting thing that's hasn't happened for like years, yeah. is that I had one kid just really excited about comparing voltage yeah. and really looking at the voltages between the solar panels uh-huh. And then looking at them connected, but just fascinated by it.
You know, we were talking about telling him about current, right?
Right.
Because then you can do so much more. But yeah. then on a multimeter, it's like, well, you know, you got to switch back and forth. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, we have those analog ammeters.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Right? Mm-hmm. And all you need to tell them is you break your line, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of, so wherever it's going, instead of having your wire go from this guy to the battery or to the solar cell, you have it go to one post on the meter and from the other post, mm-hmm. as opposed to the voltage.
Right.
That's pretty easy to understand, I think.
Yeah,
and I'll then have he could to measure on there the current.
Right. I'll have to do that this week because he...
We have like two or three laying around. Like I use them for mm-hmm. stuff.
Because I think he's going to go totally to more of the... looking at voltage, science. Current, science.
As opposed and, to yeah. like engineering type
right.
stuff.
Right. And so it's just, it's really neat yeah. how he's kind of on his own little plane
cool.
of it. And I think it's just, it's Oops. Nice to see.
We got ringing here. Okay. Other minor topics. I mm-hmm. have ones that I think you're going to find very interesting.
Okay.
I'm going to pick ones that I think we're not going to talk about so much. Oh man. You're going to like this one. You don't know about this, I don't think. You're going to like this one. Okay. Okay. I have two more minor topics.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have anything from the Linux magazine. I just
okay.
incredibly busy at work last week and mm-hmm. had to work over the weekend. That was a bummer, but so I got nothing done. But out of science, there was you keep seeing these semiconductor research done with nanoparticles and mm-hmm. especially carbon nanotubes, and I've never actually seen. I guess the field's been moving forward. Anyway, there's last week's Science had one on, they constructed actual transistors out of
right.
single-layered carbon nanotubes,
mm-hmm.
and they crossed two boundaries that haven't been crossed before. One is people have put together semiconductor-type devices out of nanotubes, but the overall efficiency of the whole device, regardless of what the research says about the tubes, is the contacts with them have always been very high resistance
mm-hmm.
and poor in other ways, like mechanically, I think. And these ones have gotten... they're making straight contact, just... The nanotube abuts a piece of molybdenum, and they have electron micrographs of them. So I don't see it here, but so there's your molybdenum. This is a nanotube. Supposedly this is false color of the nanotubes and the molybdenum. I can't tell what is what.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nanotube anyway. So I'm showing you pictures. This is not working
yeah.
for the podcast, but so you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Anyway, the connection between the nanotube and the molybdenum is low resistance. The other thing is the distance between across from one to the next. It's not been possible to get it very low, and that's what's stopping the industry right now in terms of miniaturizations. CMOS transistors, you can only get mm-hmm. so small, and they're not getting any smaller now. We've reached the limit.
Right.
And these guys, they've gotten down to below 10 nanometers, which is the other big step they've been mm-hmm. able to do.
Wow.
So, yeah. So this is kind of interesting. I didn't see anywhere in the article, well, I didn't read the whole thing. I read parts. And I didn't read the perspective. I think there's a perspective on it, but you know, sometimes they say things about the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's like, you know, how, if this is something that's, you know, you can make a few, but scaling up
mm-hmm.
is not going to be possible. Or if you do, how sturdy is the mm-hmm. whole construction anyway. But it was neat. So it's not often you see an entire little device that you can test.
Nice.
The other one is the one that you saw the movies for just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they call them mega super molecules
mm-hmm.
to make fuels safer. I think the idea of making fuels safer is basically a lot of what's driving the research, but there's many other applications. Anyway, the idea is that fuels, especially jet fuels, but others also, if you have accidents, they tend to vaporize. And then when they catch on fire, it's an explosive fire.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find a way to make the droplets bigger, you can slow down your explosion. Make it mm-hmm. small, and kind of makes sense because less surface area. And how do you do that? And a lot of research has been going on with not much progress. And I guess supposedly they've made this huge jump, and they did it by going back to theory, which is kind of cool. You know, people are always like, "I'll just do it
mm-hmm.
and figure it out," because theory, you know, is just not that useful. It's mm-hmm. interesting for writing papers, but
right.
But I guess the field has been stalled, and they were doing experiments and getting the same results over, and so they just studied up the theory. See, who is this? So it's Meng-Sin Wei. It's the first author. Looks like Julia A. Cornfield is corresponding author, I want to say. Yes. California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. So, oh, JPL also. Cool. Anyway, and so basically what they found is if you have these super long molecules, and this is what was known before, then they can slow down a fuel from mm-hmm. or any kind of liquid from going into mist, because it acts like a rubber band. So mm-hmm. it stops elongation. But over time, they break
mm-hmm.
because they're so long. So shear causes force on them, and
right.
and they break. So that's not useful. And if you add functional groups on them to make them sticky, they tend to stick to themselves and form these little balls. Now, if you take short molecules and you put the functional groups that stick to each other at the ends, well, mostly they see themselves, so they stick into little balls again.
mm-hmm.
But if you have these long molecules, not as long as these ultra-longs, and you stick the functional groups at the ends, then that was what they've discovered.
Got it.
Was the optimal way. And they did the theory first, found out, hey, this is what you should do, tried it out, and sure enough, that was the big step. So
oh,
it's
nice.
Really cool. And, yeah, I guess what happens is in pumps, so like mechanical devices handle the fuel and stuff, you get shear, the molecules come apart instead of breaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it has very little, they stay good, and also it has little effect on the actual pumping or anything.
Right.
But if you go to mist it, there's some resilience in mm-hmm. those molecules, and they detach and reform.
Right.
And anytime they're in a static tank, they reattach. So it's actually the perfect condition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the movies. They're kind of cool.
They are.
They I don't know if they shoot a bullet or something at a nozzle that's capped, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see this mist come out, and you can see the fire just
mm-hmm.
engulf this mist. And you
yeah.
can see it in different patterns. Sometimes it's like little points of flashing light here right. and there for the ones that where they added their additive.
And then the other one has yeah. these huge rolling clouds
of fire.
Yeah. When you're talking, it brings back a discussion that we had last week that I don't think we mentioned on the podcast. It's the flow batteries. And I think that's kind of a neat thing that's also yeah. been mentioned in the last few weeks.
Did where we talk about it or not?
I don't think we did. It was something that we talked about because we'd both read it.
No, I think we did.
Really?
Alkaline quinone.
Okay.
We talked about it a little bit.
Do we? Okay. So it's just there's a lot of interesting things going on in the energy field. And of course, you know, it's one of those things that will take a lot of research before we get something that's practically used, but we need that baseline to really build up that field and to think of different viable sources.
Yeah, so it's the ferrocyanide mm-hmm. and the quinones. You know, I can't remember. Maybe we didn't talk about it.
I don't think we did.
Because I remember talking to you about it like in the car and something.
Yeah. That's what it was.
Oh, shoot. That was a good...
So, anyway, I just wanted to bring it up because you have so many cool things.
Yeah.
And with the flow battery, one of the things that was really appealing is instead of a battery running out of energy, you have this refillable system.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a fuel cell.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
it's a flow
it's
battery.
It's a flow.
It's not...
Right.
Yeah.
And also,
so
it was
upscaled.
Alkaline. Is that correct?
Yeah, so
it was
normally they're
alkaline.
Acid, mm-hmm. and theirs was alkaline, and so it was a lot less corrosive.
Right, which makes it easier to use with different machinery and that without having it have all kinds of problems with the corrosive.
We've been mentioning this stuff. We need to do a better job of referencing it. So this
I'm
going to
write it down right now.
September 25th mm-hmm. issue. Of Science, page 1529. Alkaline quinone flow batteries. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, fascinating.
Yeah, it's funny. We talk about stuff in the car and just mm-hmm. at dinner time and stuff, and then I think we talked about it in the podcast.
Right, because it's like, oh yeah, we've talked about that.
But there's no time to go back to it, you know.
No. So I just wanted to mention it because it kind of went along nicely with what you were just discussing.
Oh, and
discussing.
I see the Martian there. Did we talk about the Martian? We haven't seen the Martian.
No.
You know, we never go to the... Oh, you go with Luke sometimes.
I go with Luke.
Might have to go to the movies this time.
I think
this
you
is
might
a
have
pretty
to
big
go.
Deal.
Okay, you might have to go to this one.
Might have to go to this one.
Because we read this on our anniversary.
So from the write-ups I've heard about it, it really sounds like they've tried to make the science as true as possible.
Nice, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun of the movie, that everything mm-hmm. or of the story, that everything is really thought out and mm-hmm. involves so many different types of science.
Right.
So I'm curious.
Okay, Pat, it's time to jump from our minor topics
to our major ones.
To our major ones.
I have some.
You have some great
minor
stuff.
Ones that I know are going to be major ones, just because you're going to want to run with them.
Mm-hmm.
But well, normally our major ones. This is going to be kind of major minor. Because I haven't seen yours and you haven't seen mine, so they can't really be major topics.
Right.
So they're going to be medium topics. We have no major topics.
Okay, we have no major topics. No.
We have medium topics.
I was actually referring to what you've been working on for the last week.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that's what I meant as major.
Okay, yeah, okay. That's major.
Yeah, and I think we should hit that before we do anything else. Because
so maybe I should... mention the stuff that I thought you'd really be into. So, darn it, I'm going to have to mention Kafka.
No.
Inside joke, no. I'm going to have to mention CRISPR.
Yeah, I guess.
So, this is just a, is it a, I can't remember. This is a, is it news or perspective? I don't know. I think it's just news. Anyway, it's out of October 2nd issue of Science.
Mm-hmm.
And it's page, where the 16, new proteins may expand, improve genome editing, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's all about CPF1.
Mm-hmm.
So let's review CRISPR again.
Yeah.
Not the whole thing, just parts. We'll keep, every time it comes up, we can do a little more.
Yeah, and, definitely.
And you were going to put all sorts of, so this is something.
Yeah, that article that, I need. You'll have to share it with me.
The whole concept is, okay, let's back up in CRISPR before the concept of the article. So CRISPR is a system mm-hmm. that bacteria use to defend against viruses that attack them.
Right.
And other things that inject, that somehow,
inject. If they get
DNA inside of them.
Yeah.
Right. So, and basically they want to destroy it. So that mm-hmm. means cutting it.
Cutting it up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so CRISPR is the system, and I underlined it here so we remember. CRISPR stands for clustered C, regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically, you have a piece of RNA that the bacterium makes,
mm-hmm.
and you have a protein, and there's many different types of CRISPR,
mm-hmm.
but one type uses a type of protein called, subtype of protein called Cas9. I want to say subtype, because there's many Cas9s, it turns out.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, Cas9 hooks up to the RNA. Well, so the RNA mm-hmm. can bind to some pieces of DNA.
Right.
Right. And then that binds to Cas9, and Cas9 mm-hmm. is a nuclease, means it cuts DNA.
Right.
But it'll only cut it if it can bind to the RNA and DNA together.
Right.
So the RNA is the recognition site, and that's why for biotechnology it's amazing, right? Because you mm-hmm. create an RNA that fits Cas9.
Right.
But you put a recognition sequence on it to the DNA you want to destroy. You put mm-hmm. that in the cell. Boom,
right.
That DNA is history. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it turns out Cas9, the reason that CRISPR became so big is because of Cas9. Because
right.
it turns out that all of these bacterial systems are incredibly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
They have a nuclease, but they also have tons of other proteins required for it to work.
Mm-hmm.
Cas9 just needs itself. That's
right.
why biotechnologically it became big, because you just, all you needed was your RNA and your Cas9.
Right.
And that was it. But there might be advantages to using others. So one thing that's come up as a big issue is that Cas9 is kind of not exactly always cutting the right stuff.
Right.
Its
accuracy is not...
It's not the best. So this article has nothing to do with accuracy, actually. But it's just the idea that, yeah, so Cas9 has showed us that there's ways to do it, and it's the most popular. But there's many other
right.
nucleases, like totally different families.
Mm-hmm.
And this one group, let's see if I can find the name... Daniel Haft,
mm-hmm.
I think he's the one who came up with this different
right.
nuclease.
An CPF1. RNA system.
Well, it's the same as CRISPR.
Mm-hmm. Shorter units?
Right. It uses a shorter RNA. Mm-hmm. So the protein is called CPF1. So mm-hmm. it would be CRISPR CPF1 instead of CRISPR Cas9.
I had that article.
Did you really?
But you know, you remember you told me about
was that last
saving
week or 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Okay.
You remember you told me about saving with Zernal?
Yeah.
I did not save it well, so I don't have them really.
Right, because you opened it with Zernal in the webpage.
Right. I was really excited about this article.
Yeah. So CPF1,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if having a small RNA is as big a deal. I mean, I'm not in this kind of field, so I'm not sure.
Well,
but
they told Okay.
Yeah.
So in the article I read, smaller subunits are easier to use. And also this one is much cheaper.
But smaller subunits, that'd be CPF1, is smaller than Cas9.
Right.
I mean, getting this thing into a cell is a pain.
Right. But
this
it's,
part, it's,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's cheaper system overall.
So it'd be cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing interesting is that Cas9 cuts the DNA straight across, while CPF1 cuts it with tails kind of hanging on. So it's two different places on the DNA, not straight across. I don't know.
I don't know if that has
in
a
in the
benefit.
Future. Well, that might be a problem, or it might be. I mean, that's the thing. Is
right? No, I.
The main
I,
point of
I
the article.
I meant that. Yeah, I have no idea.
The main point of the article was like, you know, CPF1 might be less specific for all we know, right? And there's not been much work done with it. But I think the idea is that, hey, look, now we've got this other one, and other people are starting to work with other ones. There'll be different things where different ones will be the best.
Right.
One thing that I didn't realize is that,
go ahead. I saw it as more of and I'm sure you were thinking the same lines, is of a spectrum of it depends what you're going for, and it depends on what your focus is.
Yeah.
And so maybe Cas9 would work in some situations where this other one will work in other situations because of the length of the section that you're
of
going
the
for.
Of the RNA.
Or the RNA and how it
Here's another one I didn't realize this about Cas9, is that you design your RNA to match your piece of DNA, right? And then that gets in the cell, and Cas9 is there, and they bind. That's not enough. Cas9 won't just cut it. It needs the DNA to have a particular sequence. So it doesn't work. It's not...
That sequence has to be there for it to make that cut.
Exactly, yeah.
And so you have to put it in. And I think that's part of the problem with Cas9 not being as effective, because it has to be kind of a...
At a particular spot.
At a particular spot. And so you throw in all of this stuff, and you hope that you will get the right...
So it has to be what is called a PAM sequence.
Yeah.
And the PAM has to contain guanine and cytosine. Or has to contain guanine and cytosine bases. I don't know where. CPF1...
Doesn't need that.
Needs two thymines in a row.
Right.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
I don't know the sequence specifically for the guanine and cytosine. I mean, it's... Yeah. I don't know how restrictive that is, actually.
I don't know either. It's...
They did say that one thing that's interesting about CPF1 is that humans and malaria, as examples, have higher thymine content in their DNA than other organisms. So that might be like you were saying. You can't find your right cutting sequence. You know, you use CPF1 if you're looking in humans or malaria.
It might be species specific or
kind of, so I thought that was really
target
cool.
specific in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
I read that article. I was very excited about it.
So that sounds cool. So I think CRISPR is going to be here continuously. And you know, it's really because of the specificity of the technique and the material you're working with, this is going to be an area where you're going to need some experts to figure out, okay, so what exactly do we use for these experiments?
And I just do not know where that will put us in the future either. You know, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah. I'm going to make space for myself so I don't keep losing track of stuff. I'm going to close ones that we've talked about.
Okay, Patrick, I'm asking again. What have you accomplished this week?
No, there's one more.
Oh, we have one more.
Yeah. And didn't you, now that you saw the last one, you don't want to do one more, but...
Well, I'm trying to be good so that we have time to...
Yes. You want me to close it? I think we should close it.
All of my favorites.
I think we should close this. Kelly's looking at the title that I just brought up. Yeah. On Europe's rifts over transgenic crops deepen at key deadline.
So what did they find
October
out?
2nd.
I want that article too. That one I have not seen because I looked for those.
18. Okay. So.
Is this from the new issue?
I didn't realize how bad it is in Europe.
Yeah.
They are. So, but it depends on the country.
Mm-hmm.
So here, let me show you the map, right? Spain is like, yeah, GM everything. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the map, they talk about Spain a lot in the article. If you look at the map, Romania, Slovakia, Czech Republic all seem pretty, you know, yeah, we're good mm-hmm. with GM. Germany and Italy and Slovenia are kind of against it.
Mm-hmm.
England looks like perfectly fine, but there's no GM happening there for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. France is totally against it. Netherlands, Luxembourg, totally against it. Wallonia, just, I don't know how they get certain rights for just a region of Belgium, but in the EU charter, somehow it sounds to me like Wallonia has their own rights to decide certain things for themselves. It's like, you've got to be kidding.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, Latvia, totally against GM crops.
What about Greece?
Greece, totally against it.
Really?
Absolutely, totally against it.
Did not expect that.
No. So, yeah. That's weird. But anyway, so. This is like the European Union going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be all these rules.
Unifying
rules. Like now they mm-hmm. supersede national rules. And basically they decided this has gotten so bad, we're going to go backwards. In other words, it sounds
They decided
to me,
they could not decide.
It sounds to me like they're making rules that say that you countries all decide for yourselves, and you need to abide by that rule. That you decide. I mean, that's basically what it sounded. It's like they're trying to bend over backwards to allow things to happen. So to allow everybody to do their own thing. Okay, so what's exactly happening? A lot of countries just don't want GM foods. And GM seeds specifically being sold in their countries is a big thing. So they've come up with option one and option two. This is actual European Union speak.
Okay. So, I'm curious.
Yeah. So.
I'm waiting to.
So option one is, this is going to sound so lame. There's rules that say that, you know, the European Union as a governing body basically says GM crops are fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a panel or a commission, it's not a commission, it's the European Food Safety Authority, an authority, I guess. So EFSA, that decide whether it's safe or not.
Right.
And basically they're finding everything safe, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that makes it to an application.
Right.
It's not like they're, the companies are just not going, sending in stuff that they think in any way is not going to be passing their tests. So, and then
it could be really harmful for them in the future, like financially too, to that company. So they don't want to take that chance.
I think they're pretty strict.
Yeah.
From what I was reading. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah. So, and then, so they decide whether it's safe or not, and European Commission then decides. And then according to the rules, the countries have to accept it into their market. And the people don't want that, and the politicians are elected by the people, and so they don't want it, but they have to abide by the rules that everybody said they wanted to be part of the European Union. So it's crazy. So option one is, as a country, you may ask a manufacturer of GM foods to not apply for rights in your country. I don't even know what that means.
What does that mean?
You may ask as a country. And so if the
please do not knock at our door.
Do not knock at our door. Exactly. And so if the company never applies for a right to sell their foods in your country. Well, yeah, they're not going to be sold in your country, and you're not violating the rule by saying you can't have it here.
Right.
Because of, so that's crazy. There's a deadline for option one. It's October 3rd.
Oh my gosh, we're past.
So that's past it already. Mm-hmm. So whoever's applied for option one, so the country's...
The do not knock policy.
The do not knock policy, yeah.
Okay.
Something like, I don't know, a huge number of countries have already applied for option one. Let me see.
Wow.
Science went to France, nine states out of the 28.
Wow.
At that time, Germany and Italy had not applied for option one yet, but it sounded like they were going to before the deadline. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the deal is. And then there's option two. So option one is pretty simple, mm-hmm. right? You go through the special process, you negotiate with the companies, I guess, or tell them we don't want it and they're not supposed to go in.
We're put on the do not call list.
Yeah,
it's our do not call list that doesn't work anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Anyway, so option two is you can actually ban certain crops, food
wow.
products, or entire groups in your entire country or any part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And for option two, there's no deadline. So you can invoke option two any way you want. So you think, well, why do option one? The thing is about option two is that you have to come up with a reason why you're not going to allow that food in your country. It's not like option one. You're just like, we just don't want it.
Okay.
Right?
So I'm trying to think. Is this like under a larger umbrella, or is this just dealing with GM foods? So is this something like, I'm not going to buy poultry from this company?
Just GM.
Okay.
It has nothing to do.
Okay.
It's just
I was thinking of a safety, you know, a general safety concern.
Here's the interesting thing. So if you remember, I just mentioned the EFSA. Mm-hmm. They do, for the European Union, the decision as to whether something is safe or not.
Mm-hmm.
So as a country, if you choose option two, and you say, we don't want such and such GM food in here, like Monsanto corn, then it's not enough for you to say, well, it's not safe. Because the EFSA has precedence over you, right?
Oh,
if they
got
say
it.
It's safe, it's safe, right?
Yeah.
So you come up... So you have to come up with these other things. So they give a couple examples. You can say, well, we want to develop our organic farming sector and that
okay.
we compete with it.
Okay.
Right?
I was concerned because I was thinking then you get these people coming on and telling you it's unsafe because of maybe the research that they've done or have not done.
No. It'd be very difficult to fight it on safety grounds because of the EFSA.
Well, this is interesting.
Another interesting example they give is, you know, let's say you have some insects that are sensitive to your, because some GM crops are anti-insect, right?
Right.
And if some insects that are, you want to preserve then start dying because of all these GM crops, you could say, well, we could protect the insects from your crops, but that'd be too costly for us, so we just don't want them. And
right.
that would be acceptable, even if
EFSA
say it's okay.
So looking
you know
on habitat grounds or ecology grounds.
Yeah. But you know, it's insane because you're basically going to ask people to lie, right? To make up reasons that have nothing to do. It's a political, people just don't want it because they're afraid of it.
Right.
And so then you have to make up stuff to stop it from getting into your country. It's psychologically bad for a society to do that, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's
I know,
not
it's,
facing the issue straight on.
It's just mind-boggling, you know, to think of this. You know what it brings back? And this has nothing to do with GM foods. But do you remember when they first started the European Union? And then they told the French that a lot of their cheeses would not be allowed.
Yeah. That was funny.
So this kind of has that ring to it for me, you know, that where you're like, well, is that allowed or is that not allowed? Anyway.
So it's it might actually turn out to be to have an interesting side effect. It used to be, if you wanted to do research into GM foods in Europe, it was practically impossible, because you do the application, and if it's allowed, it's got to be allowed for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the other countries that are against it would start to complain, and the process would take forever. And so the typical example is Spain, where some GM research is actually being done. And they were like, you know, we want the stuff, and any approval would take so long by the time, you know, the approval came around, the company was just had moved on,
mm-hmm.
or the research had just been done somewhere else.
Right, right.
So now, with some countries being allowed to opt out, maybe actually approval for the whole union, they're thinking, will go a hell of a lot faster. Because you don't like it, fine, opt out, you know?
Oh, got it.
We want to go ahead with it, so
yeah,
we'll get,
so do yeah. your thing, we're doing ours.
Right.
Okay, got that. You know...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, I'll let
the
you
other
finish,
because
it'll pull us off.
A lot of people are saying that basically that part, it's not going to be a big thing, because the research has already disappeared. It's gone other places.
Mm.
They just went too long without it. Well, Spain looks like it's doing a fair bit, so.
Yeah. Interesting fact.
Yep.
Fun fact from around here.
Yeah.
Melinda, she owns a farm
mm-hmm.
and garden supply store. And some of her biggest organic farmers are tobacco farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're people...
That's an amazing concept. But
isn't it bizarre? So get this. This is why, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because they're growing organic tobacco, sending it over to Europe because there's a demand for organic. And in some countries, that's the only thing you can sell.
Wow.
And so suddenly,
don't want any
the tobacco
chemicals in me.
Yeah.
I want
that pure organic
smoke.
Chemicals. Yeah. Anyway, so compounds. That's what we'll call them. We won't call them chemicals. Compounds.
Compounds.
Yeah, same thing. So I thought it was just bizarre. And when I'm hearing this argument, I'm thinking of all of these things that kind of surround that and change the commerce, even locally, of what's going on here. So actually the tobacco industry is actually on the rise, the organic tobacco.
The organic tobacco,
yeah.
Tobacco selling into Europe.
Bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought you'd find that kind of interesting as we're having this discussion. Very interesting debate, and I really want to dig into that more. I just didn't have a chance this summer. I couldn't see well enough to do it, but now I can.
Yeah.
So I guess it's next summer's project.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about your new friend, Patrick.
My new friend. What's my new friend? The shoebox, the plastic shoebox.
Well, what's in the plastic shoebox?
Yeah. So we finally finished building our transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
I did most of the building.
Yeah, and it looks beautiful.
You did some of it, which made me feel good.
Yeah.
So it fits in a shoebox, and I've got to write sometime about this in one of the blogs. I've written about parts of these in the blog since the server went down, but not the whole thing. I think the biggest thing is, well, first let's describe it, because it's finished, sort of. It's a plastic box. It's about the size of a shoebox. There's two acrylic boards separated by some spacers. They're about, what? I don't know. Is that like 10 centimeters apart?
Yeah.
Not quite.
So it's... Yeah, it's about 10 centimeters.
Maybe 8 centimeters.
8 centimeters. That holds it off the base where you have a battery pack underneath.
So, the battery pack's underneath being held on with Velcro straps. Mm-hmm. That seems to work fairly well.
It does. So. One of the things that I really like about this whole setup mm-hmm. is it's a prototype setup, and each component can be tested and is...
So the top, maybe we should describe the top. The top acrylic basically has PCBs attached to it mm-hmm. with some more spacers.
Right.
So the individual PCBs stand off. And each little PCB is a module that has a particular function.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm counting, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different mm-hmm. modules, let's call them.
And I love that you have those different modules. Like, it's just really neat for testing.
It's already proved useful.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. But so there's a power regulator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only getting the 5 volts out of there, but in the future we'll probably have to split 5 and 3 volts.
Mm-hmm.
Flowing through the general direction of information, there's the module that contains the ATmega 328,
mm-hmm.
which part of that is our Oshpark boards that we had made so long ago. It's cool to have we've talked about them on and off so many times. There's a little crane with the star on
crane.
It. Yeah, and it works. And it's part of a... So that's very cool. We have quite a few ideas for how to change that. So that's another module. We have a module that holds all the switches and the buttons, mm-hmm. and so many wires connecting that to the controller module with the ATmega. And then there's a little SI5351 breakout from Adafruit.
Mm-hmm.
So this one we didn't build ourselves.
With the little flower on it. With the blue board.
With the blue board. Mm-hmm. The Adafruit. Yes, we have the Oshpark purple and the Adafruit blue. We don't have any Spark Fun red.
No, we don't.
So, too bad.
We do have a red button, though.
We have a red button, yeah. And those knobs that we were talking about earlier, very cool looking.
I'm so happy. They are. They look awesome.
Yeah, because I had those Sharpie marks and pieces mm-hmm. of tape that really did not work.
No.
Then we have a driver module, and this is the one that really made the system really obviously a good system, because this is the second one I've built, and we're going on to our third one. I think this is going to be after. So this weekend we're going... Mm-hmm. to do the RDF with the kids, so I don't want to change anything after that. But I think that's where our problem is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still not, there's some mismatch in impedance or something, or voltage level. But anyway, and then that goes to a power amplifier, which uses IRF610, I think it is. And that goes into a filter module, which this time I did not design myself. I mm-hmm. just used the one that Rick Strobe designed, or used from someone else, though, mm-hmm. I don't know. And then there's a module, all it is the antenna connector.
Right.
It's cool.
So,
it all fits in the shoebox. It's plastic. The top can go on top. We have to open it to get to the stuff inside, but...
But it's semi-waterproof.
It's waterproof with the top on. Mm-hmm. There's no way to connect the antenna then, but, you know, we can put it in a bag.
Right. You know, you're outside.
Carrying it around
when you're running it. And it's awesome for setting it down on the ground and not worrying about it.
Yeah.
Here's what I like is that you're going to take all of this and you're going to construct another Oshpark board.
Just a single board.
A single board for everything. And I think that's really exciting.
I think so too.
That, you know, you've tested each section.
Yeah.
You've come up with a plan for it. He's going to try to run, 5 boards and see how they work. And then maybe run.
Five.
Yeah, I think so too. And then I think you're going to probably upgrade it, because there's a few upgrades you've already talked about.
Yeah.
For this board, but you're like, I'm just going to keep it simple the first time, and then...
Well, you know, the one big one, I think, is the SI5351.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get our own pattern on a board instead of getting the Adafruit. I love the Adafruit boards, but the fact is, if we just have one board, that'll be nicer.
Right. And also, we're hoping to construct something half of the size.
Maybe I should just go ahead and use the Adafruit one, because then we could, it should be faster.
Right.
And it'll be a little bit funky, because it's a board onto a board, so we'd have to put in screws somehow, I guess. But
right.
I don't know.
So, very neat setup, and Patrick will have many pictures up on our blog soon for you guys to see. So, it'll be a lot of fun this weekend, too.
Definitely a good way to test stuff before you make your final board.
Yeah, I think it's really an awesome way to do it.
When we get the Oshpark boards made, this thing is being taken apart, right?
Right.
All these different modules can be used, especially...
No, you aren't going to take it apart.
No?
You're going to tear it apart.
Tear it apart. So, Dave Jones from the UV blog.
Dave Jones. Yeah. So and, you listen to Dave Jones.
Yeah, we both heard him. Yeah. Actually, it was from one of his videos, I think.
Uh-huh. I think it
but,
was.
But, you know, I mean, the 18 mega board,
right,
that can be used for tons of stuff.
Right.
The voltage regulator board, that can be used for tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The power amplifier for a fair bit. The filter for tons of stuff. The SI53, well, that's its own thing, but...
Mm-hmm.
Hell, even the switches, the wires can be cut and resoldered to different things to do them differently and stuff. So,
I'm really excited to see how the kids are going to react to this weekend.
Yeah, me too.
And I really hope they'll get all excited. Yeah. I'm trying to brace myself, so if they don't, I'll be like, it's okay.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
You know.
If they're not.
So this weekend, we're getting together with the Avatar group.
Yep.
It is a neat group of students who we've been working with. We'll probably have about 10 students there, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did the lunchtime, who's coming? Of course, everyone's like, yeah, I'm coming. And then, you know, as we start talking, I'm like, so you have a ride? And they're like, yeah, I'm going to ask when I get home. I say, well, do you need a ride? So we're like negotiating rides and that. So I think we have everybody with rides, and we'll give them a reminder slip tomorrow. Yeah. And hopefully we'll be outside at Okinichi, but it looks like we're having 80% chance rain and probably more by now. And so we may actually run an indoor event and do a small maker space.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun too. It's just, it would be so much more exciting to be outside with the kids.
It would be.
Because I just want to give them the joy of being outdoors and doing things. And we had a geological hike, and we're going to look at a site where they did an archaeological dig and just goofy things outside, just exploring. And I don't think these students have had that opportunity, and I'd love to share that with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it'll be fun running around in the woods for Ardiff, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, I hope we get to, well, I'm not going to get too excited.
No.
Either way, we'll make it work.
So, in our future plans, because we should probably move over to future plans now, Ardiff this weekend.
Yep.
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine.
And
shine or indoors.
Shine or indoors. And we're having the website soon to be up and running.
Yeah, we were saying this Sunday. I'm not sure. But I think within 1 week. Definitely before the next podcast, we should have it.
We've been writing notes to each other, so we're getting serious.
I mean, we've worked at it.
Yeah, so. We have. It's just, there's a lot to look at, and we're still going through it. So school makerspace for the future. We had this cool little makerspace this week where everybody kind of just started building. I couldn't believe it. They went from the makey playing game controllers to, oh my goodness, I'm going to build a car. I'm going to build a solar car. And then just starting to test equipment, I kept on pulling out more stuff. They were actually, you know, we're cutting boards, we're doing all kinds of things. And then at the by the end of the class, I had three people ask me if we could have different solar panels to test. Uh-huh. So next week I promised them I'll have other solar panels so they can see what's the best. And the request for small alligator clips that we ordered on the last order a few days ago. So they're going in.
They wanted leads, not alligator clips. They wanted leads with alligator clips on the end. Okay.
Yeah, they wanted the small ones. Sorry.
Because we had that bag.
Yeah,
that
No. They wanted the leads.
Okay.
Yeah. And then LED lights. LEDs. And then it's so funny because I was telling Pat, oh, yeah, they want that. He goes, well, you'll have to go for resistors or you're just going to blow them.
Them all, yeah.
Right? And then, so the student that asked for the LED lights this week at the makerspace, he like pops up in front of me in the hall, uh-huh. you know, as I'm standing there before class starts. And he's like, so do you have LEDs? I said, yeah, I have a lot of LEDs, but we also need the resistors. And he's like, duh, yeah. I'm just like, you didn't know that. You are totally making that up.
Well, see, that's the nice thing is you can let them blow a bunch.
Right. Right?
We have so many from grab bags and different sources.
Right.
Let them blow a bunch and then go back to them. Duh. Yeah. Not using resistors. Of course, you're going to blow them. Just throw all that stuff in the garbage.
Start again.
Here's another bag.
So a lot of fun and I'm excited.
Don't you know you can't, there's smoke inside.
Yeah.
You can't release the smoke or it stops working. The smoke has to stay inside.
I'll have to tell them that. Anyway, so a lot of fun and it's a neat transition to my group that they're becoming builders.
How many of those kids are there?
Are
part of this, specifically those that are going crazy?
They're going crazy. So they're grouping up. They're doing it as a group.
Yeah.
And they're like, they... all of them are building. That's the weird thing. So one of them was over reading a book and then they're like, hey, Atlee, like, come on over here. I want to show you something. Atlee's like, sorry, I'm reading. He goes, no. So they pull him out and there's Atlee starting to build a car, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just really interesting how it's just was contagious.
Cool.
In a sense. So I don't know if they'll all build next week.
Have you gotten girls?
So I have three girls.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
that's good.
I have three girls that go. One girl.
What are they doing?
One of the girls is starting to build. One of the girls is like, I program.
That's okay.
I'm like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so she really wants to program.
Is she only the pies? Or
actually, she wants to do something with music.
Okay.
Where she's using a program, I don't know what it is, a Japanese program,
uh-huh.
and she's stitching together music to make words.
Cool.
So it's really a special thing. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
that sounds awesome.
So I'm looking forward to seeing, actually, I have to bring my computer this week so she can use it because we couldn't get...
Totally not my thing, but it sounds really cool.
No, it's not mine either, but I think it would be...
Nice to have
someone go off in a different direction and see what happens.
It's great.
And then I have one guy that's wants to do more with the Raspberry Pi.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to get the camera working. So I'm giving him the camera next week. And I told him it might be broken, but he's going to try it out.
Okay.
And he may be someone that wants to really see what a different Raspberry Pi project. Like something that's quite challenging. So
we only have one of those cameras?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Makes me wonder if we should just get another. It might not be broken, but if...
I know. I kind of want to wait to see if it's broken and then bring in a new one. And I can order it for the following week.
Isaac had one.
Yeah, he did.
He
took it with him.
He took it with him. Okay. Well, good for him.
He's been taking his toys.
Yep.
They better not take their other toys. I want the new toys.
The new toys. Are we going to talk about the new toys?
No, we can't talk about the new toys. Because if we post it and they actually listen.
And they listen to the podcast.
Yeah. They'll be like, yeah, we totally knew because you told us.
Oh, that's going to be so difficult. But we'll have a lot to talk about after Christmas.
We will. We will. So I guess this is our time to wrap up.
I just have one thing to say. We failed.
I know.
That's so bad. We're just going to cut it a bit short, do a shorter one, just 50 minutes. I don't know how long into the recording we started, but it couldn't have been 5 minutes.
No.
So. Yeah. Anyway, do I go ahead?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out our blog.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.